Now you can.
Recording in progress.
Thank you. Here's a little story. Imagine Buddha in his moment of enlightenment being lit from within. I doubt he knew he was aglow. In fact, when Buddha arose from under the Bodhi tree, it is said a monk approached him in utter amazement of his luminosity and asked, "Oh, Holy One, what are you? You must be a god." Buddha, not thinking of himself as anything, just present, answered, "No, not a god," and kept walking. Still, the monk pursued him. "Then you must be Brahma himself." At this, the Buddha simply uttered, "No." The monk, confused, implored, "Then what are you? Tell me, please, what are you?" Buddha could not repress his joy, and he replied, "I am awake." It's a story by Mark Nepo from the Book of Awakening. Well, we are the beneficiaries of the Buddha being awake 2,500 years after his powerful awakening. The reality of our present-day lives is blessed and energized by his experience of enlightenment, being aglow, lit from within, a life of being awake. I think we heard some of that experience and felt some of that glow in what some people just were talking about, coming to a morning sitting each day. And many accounts of the Buddha emphasize that he was a teacher, not a savior, not a god or a demigod. And others call him a physician and a healer who taught, in his own words, only two things: suffering and the cessation of suffering. Dogen's teachings are also about suffering and the cessation of suffering, especially the suffering we encounter when trying to grasp and hold on to an intellectual understanding of reality. His teachings, according to Kaz's original 1985 introduction to Moon in a Dewdrop, clearly presented the Fukan Zazengi always being grounded in practical methodology and how to concentrate body and mind, how to understand and follow monastic rules, and how to view various aspects of life and regulate daily conduct. Kaz called this the interpenetration of practice and enlightenment, which now, in a succession of translations over the last 40 years, appears in this version we're using as practice realization. Practice realization, all one word, no hyphen, totally culminated enlightenment. And Kaz goes on to tell us that practice in this time, in his way of hearing it, means ongoing daily activity centered in Zazen. Dogen's ways of teaching this direct experience of what's ungraspable and elusive, of freedom in practice. But as a teacher and a poet, Dogen often confounds our linear ways of trying to understand his meaning, our desire to get it. He also teaches subtly and boldly with methods and tools of paradox, of poems and koans, stories that offer us the chance to be free from conventional views. And one of his biggest teaching gifts is to turn us upside down and inside out with references like there are here in the Fukan Zazengi What is the true dragon? What are some of these issues and objects that are listed here? And I'm going to go into that in a minute, that are not impediments to practice, but nonetheless they are distractions. And instead he points to non-thinking and taking a backward step, teaching us to defy the expectations of what's next, not to pick up the usual tools. He asks us to stop thinking of attaining enlightenment, to tend just to everyday practice, and commit our attention to the essential art of Zazen. So as I was deciding how I could talk about any of this, two thoughts kept surfacing again and again. One was, get to know your mind. The other was, give up your knowing. I returned to that introductory talk that we gave 2 weeks ago, back to a talk by Norman also on Emerson's Circles, in which he asks, what is this life and who are we? Reality is always asking us this. And somehow we have to answer with our practice. So, as we heard last week from Marianne, it is Zazen who's our teacher. Zazen who helps us to get to know our mind, to overcome our identity as knowers, to become intimate with the ineffable. Can we accept a practice of non-thinking, not knowing? Can we accept a practice as our practice, not my practice or your practice? Ours, our completely interdependent practice in this world we live in now. Can we be completely honest with how attached we are to knowing? How much we might not want to admit our everyday fears and falls, our worries of glaciers melting and artificial intelligence breaking out of control into an unknown cyber world. But how does Zazen help us respond to these questions, to these fears, to this not knowing? What is this life, and what might we see deep into reality of each being included in this we? Why is any of this investigation of Dogen's word sense, his instructions for our physical posture, the vibrations we feel in our body when we chant, the difficulty of cultivating life, of letting go into everything, while simultaneously living in a world infused with a mania for accomplishment, for power, material wealth, a world of great suffering? How is this relevant? Why do it? So we don't try to fool ourselves, that's why. We don't try to fool ourselves into believing we have transcended the suffering, or believed we've reached or attained a special state of awareness and practice, so we can stop thinking of ourselves as individuals limited by self-absorption. Get to know your mind. My mind is so slippery. I watch how much it wants to know, to find an answer to what is the isness that's being talked about in our Zen books. I see how I try to deny what a big knower I've been in this life, and how it weighs me down, especially while thinking and writing a talk about giving up knowing. How I become kind of obsessive in the process of writing a talk, searching like a private detective to solve a mysterious puzzle, and then being really turned upside down and sideways by Dogen's instructions to cease all the movements of the conscious mind, gauging of all thoughts and views, to stop pursuing words following after speech, and just to take that backward step that turns our light inwardly to illuminate the self so that the body and mind drop away and our original face will become manifest. In these last 2 months of learning about the Fukansa Zengi and the Genjo Koan, maybe something happens for a moment or a few minutes. A little freedom and spaciousness in the experience of giving up our knowing. Not necessarily being able to do the schedule that we're used to doing. Maybe our habits upended a bit. Maybe there's been an event in your life. Maybe even an event in your health. Something that really shifts who you are, shifts your knowing, asks you to get to know yourself even a little better. So practice realization, this word, just one word. It's not one practitioner's private question on one cushion, but a question large enough to hold everyone and everything sitting unknowingly alongside each other, all of us. But where do we go for help? Well, we can ask the stories and the poems, the images and the paradoxes for help. And we can ask each other. Although sometimes we don't even have to ask. The help is already present. For example, we learned about orientation from James a few weeks ago. He asked us, "What are you in the middle of your life?" And then he turned to how Dogen teaches us to examine our activities, especially the ones that reinforce pre-existing realities, and to step into Zazen, where we can take the chance to suspend all of our concerns, all of our busy activities, and directly encounter life, life as it arises. All of this is never easy to put into words, but we try in these talks. We try without being sort of mimics or just repeating what other people have said. But sometimes, and it is the danger, there are some fantastic things that we read, and I want to read a little bit here to you. It's about two of Dogen's most essential teachings that are in this fascicle, and particularly in this section, Practice Realization. There's a Japanese phrase, Shusho Ito, which means Shusho is practice, and Ito is enlightenment. Now translated in our version, as practice realization, as one sometimes just refusing even typographically to let the two words be pulled apart. It's Dogen's great insistence, and it's the technical and philosophical reframing of the traditional Buddhist relationship between practice and realization. not as two separate stages, but as one indivisible unity of practice. There's no Zazen practice now in order to become enlightened later. The sitting is the manifestation, not a rehearsal for it, not a means toward it. It's the thing itself already happening, the manifestation of ultimate reality. And then another of the great teachings essential to Dogen is about if you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. So this word suchness, it may be the hardest word in the Dharma to actually receive and understand, because the mind wants to treat it as a destination reached through sufficient effort. But Dogen's instruction collapses the gap entirely. There's no path leading up to suchness that isn't already suchness itself. You don't practice your way toward things as they are. Practicing is things as they are practicing. So that's a condensation of a lot of the teachings of Stephen Hines' book about Dogen, our original Japanese Zen teacher. It's a wonderful book, dense, but also just fascinating. He also tells us that it's not the words or the images or the phrases exactly, nor the bringing about of enlightenment by the opportunity provided by a finger, a banner, a needle, or a mallet. As our text says, realization cannot be effected either with the aid of a hosu, a fist, a staff, or a shout. It must be deportment beyond hearing and seeing, a principle prior to knowledge and perceptions. Just what is. So I think this isness of Dogen's is his Dharma gate of repose and bliss, his fundamental teaching of just there in Zazen, the right Dharma is manifesting itself, and that from the first, dullness and distraction are struck aside. No props, no reason to go off studying in exotic faraway places. Nothing fancy or extra needed. Practice realization as a rival at what we never found absent. Practice realization as a rival at what we never found absent. So I thought we might want to know a little bit about what some of those images that he just spoke of are about, not because they clarify absolutely the Dharma. They don't bring us exactly to realization. But there are stories that point us towards. So the finger, this is about Gutai, the 9th century Zen master who answered every question about Zen by silently raising one finger. A boy attendant began imitating this, and when Gutai learned of it, he cut off the boy's finger. And as the boy fled in pain, Gutai called him back, and when the boy turned, Gutai raised his own finger again, at which point the boy was instantly enlightened. This is a case that appears in the Bluecliff Record and in the Mumin Kan. And then there's the banner. This is Hui Neng's famous intervention in the flag and wind debate. Two monks were arguing whether a temple flag or the wind was moving. And the sixth ancestor said, "It is not the wind that moves. It is not the flag that moves. It is your mind that moves," ending the debate at the root rather than settling it on its own terms. And then the hosu, that's a fly whisk that you see sometimes when the doshi enters a ceremony. And the fist, both function across many koans as wordless answers raised in place of speech, the way Gutai's finger was. The staff, most famously, is Daishan's stick. It strikes a student whether they answer well or badly, because the blow isn't punishment for a wrong answer. It's a refusal to let any answer, right or wrong, stand in for direct realization. The shout, Linji's katsu, a single explosive syllable used the same way, not communication, but an interruption of the listener's whole conceptual apparatus. So why does Dogen list these here? And why does it matter to us? Is that he's not saying these gestures or ceremonial objects are meaningless. He's saying something more severe, actually. That even understanding the most famous, the most celebrated wordless teaching devices in the whole tradition, the ones every student of Zen learns and reveres, still will not get you to realization if approached through discriminative thinking. You can know exactly what happened with Gutai's finger, cite the case correctly, explain Huineng's flag and wind logic perfectly, and still have grasped nothing. Because grasping itself is the wrong verb for what these moments are doing. So I think I'm going to stop there because it's 6:15 and perhaps fold some of the rest of this talk that I wrote into our talk next week. But I wanted to be able to ask people, just how confusing was it, everything I just said? What is it that you would say is a insight to your own mind as you listen to how much Dogen does not want us to get stuck in that habit, in that way of insisting we're right or insisting we know? What do you know about your mind? How are you getting to know it better? Is there some knowing you'd like to get rid of, you'd like to give up? I'll stop there. So, Shufi, would you put people